Welcome to the Connected Leaders Academy Virtual Conference, designed to reshape your vision of transformation. As we navigate the evolving business landscape, our speakers will unveil innovative strategies to manage and initiate change. Prepare to adapt, innovate, and lead, ensuring your role as a catalyst in this transformative era.
Bonjour, everyone. It is my first time speaking on a stage like this, and yes, I'm a little terrified, but deeply honored to be here. My name is Anne Plaisance. I'm an artist, a curator, and an activist. Today, I want to share my story with you, a story about identity, about the sound of silence that almost killed me. It's November 20, 2020, full lockdown, COVID. Everyone is afraid. I'm afraid. Not only of what is outside, but of what is inside my own home. It's a beautiful sunny day. The cold, crisp air bites my skin. I looked last time at the blue door of my house, our white ranch with black framed windows in a tiny Massachusetts town. My kids are in the car. My dog is frantically crying. He senses danger. A text message appears. I landed. I will be there soon. I panic. I drive away from my life and from my husband of 22 years, because I'm afraid he will kill me. But let me take you back in time. For many years, we looked like the perfect couple. Nice friends, good restaurants, great life, travels, a beautiful home, adorable kids. On the outside, a dream. But on the inside, I was disappearing. Fading into silence, a shadow in my own life. That was my identity before November 20, 2020. And to live that life, I had to become someone I had never been allowed to be. Courageous, fierce, awake. But for now, it's Friday, November 20. Still full COVID lockdown. We are hiding at a friend's house, trying to figure out what comes next. Yes, it can happen to anyone. It happened to me. I asked myself, why did I stay 22 years? You have to understand why I could not see. When I was 11 or 12, I was sexually abused, still a child. I stopped playing with dolls that day. A part of my innocence never returned. That trauma made me vulnerable, the perfect target for someone skilled at manipulation. When I was 24, young and naive, I'm 51 now, I believed too much in Prince Charming. He didn't arrive like a monster. He arrived like a miracle. Love bombing me too much, too fast, too soon. There were incidents, of course, bizarre behaviors, moments that made my intuition scream, run, Anne, run. Once, I even packed a suitcase. My body wanted to run. My soul was screaming. But I stayed. In 2014, we moved from Poland to France. In 2015, from France to the United States. That's a lot. I took care of everything. I was exhausted. What finally helped me see the truth was something unexpected. In 2016, I began leading art workshops at a shelter for survivors of domestic violence. I remember thinking I could never do what these women did. Live with a plastic bag in one hand and a child in the other. I thought they were extraordinary. I thought, thank God I'm not in this situation, he's not hitting me. But then, I learned the vocabulary for my life. Emotional abuse, psychological abuse, financial abuse, coercive control. The cycle of abuse, the patterns. I looked at that cycle and thought that someone had drawn my life on paper. Merde. There was my life. Named, mapped, visible. And then, the moment that broke me open. It's the evening, May 1st, 2017. I see drawings covering my daughter's arms. She's 12, tiny, fragile. I touch her skin. It's all fresh wounds. She has doodled over her own cuts. I freeze. I panic. My then husband says, it's your fault. It's your daughter. Deal with it. I feel utterly alone. But I know one thing with absolute clarity. I have to save my daughter's life. In a new country, with no support system, no therapist available. She ended up spending 8 months in hospitals, trying to end her life. Sometimes the nurse called me 3 times a day to inform me. I was drowning in fear. I remember doctors using terms like anger management issues to describe her father. At his workplace, where he behaved better, they called him Hiroshima. Later in 2020, I read Shahida Harabi's book and discovered the manipulation tactics used by abusers, 20 of them. I learned also about boundaries. Boundaries? I had never heard the word before. So I had to become someone with strong boundaries. I had to become fluent in recognizing manipulation. I had to become a spy, planning my escape meticulously. I had to become a new woman. So after I escaped, after the panic and the hiding, after the hypervigilance, after crying silently at night so my children wouldn't hear my despair, after the painful divorce that felt like yet another battlefield, I realized something essential. Silence had been killing me long before fear ever did. So I did the only thing I knew how to do. I turned my pain into art. And that is how Wonder Women Now began. At first, it was small. Just me inviting survivors into a makeshift studio, often a kitchen table in a shelter. A woman would rock her 2-week-old baby. Another one would try to feed her running kids in that same kitchen. I remember a little boy really worried because his mama was sick. If she died, what would happen to him and his brothers? These women arrived erased, dismissed, ghastly, broken open. They had lost their voices, their sense of worth, their sense of self. We made art together, collage, masks, portraits, attempts to reclaim what violence tried to steal. And something extraordinary happened. Women who had arrived silent began to speak. Women who had arrived bent began to stand. Women who had arrived ashamed began to shine. They created joy out of despair, strength out of fragments, beauty out of what hurt them most. To give you another example, a few weeks ago at the shelter, a survivor with a big smile on her face told me with excitement that the vision board she had created during one of our sessions became true. Her wishes got granted. You should have seen the joy in her eyes and the emotion in mine. Seeing the transformative power of art. This project is growing from intimate workshops to large-scale exhibitions. Exhibitions shaped like a house, each room revealing the faces of abuse, verbal, financial, psychological, spiritual, physical. From the living room, the most public space, to the bedroom, the most private space. We showed what happens behind closed doors. We exposed manipulation tactics, disguised in the form of perfume bottles. Imagine a small glass bottle, a clean white label reading, gaslight number 5, love bomb, abuse number 5. Why perfume? Because scent is one of the strongest access points to memory. It lives in the limbic system, the part of the brain that shapes emotion, fear, and attachment. Modern neuroscience shows that trauma, especially trauma wrapped in the seductive perfume of manipulation, can literally rewire the brain, distorting memory, intuition, decision-making, and self-trust. So these perfume bottles represent how something invisible can become embedded inside of us, neurologically, emotionally, genetically. A legacy of confusion masked in the scent of love. And here's the hope. When you learn to recognize manipulation, you reclaim your freedom, whether in the bedroom, the boardroom, the classroom, or the political arena. Recognition becomes protection. With Wonder Women Now, we created spaces where survivors can finally say, I exist, I'm not alone, this is what happened to me. Wonder Women Now became not just an art project, but a movement, a lighthouse. It toured Massachusetts, was featured in the Boston Globe, and is now touring across Europe. And it taught me something profound. Survivors are the heroes of our time. Let me repeat that. Survivors are the heroes of our time. They show us the path to a better society. Maya Angelou said, each time a woman stands up for herself, without knowing it possibly, without claiming it, she stands up for all women. But after several years of working with survivors, I realized that we cannot do this without men. Now, imagine you're a man. You represent roughly half of humanity. When you were a little boy, maybe 5 years old, Uncle Bill told you to keep a secret. Don't tell anyone what happened in your bedroom. No one will believe you anyway. You grew up. You're 22. You don't really remember when it began. Maybe with the first small theft, the kind you brush off because it's easier than facing the truth. You're walking home. Someone bumps into you. Sorry, my mistake, he says, smiling. Minutes later, your wallet is gone. You feel stupid, ashamed, embarrassed. You tell no one. Now you're 30. Money disappears from your bank account. Hacked. You spend hours proving who you are to reclaim what was stolen. The bank officer looks at you bored. Sir, this happens. You need stronger passwords. You walk out humiliated, as if it were your fault. And from then on, no matter what you do, you get robbed. On the subway, at work, at the restaurant, in a cafe, at home, online, at a gym, by strangers, and sometimes by people you know. You change passwords, locks, routes, routines. Nothing helps. You stop sleeping well. You stop trusting. You stop breathing fully. You begin to feel like a prey, just because you're a man. One day, you catch someone in the act. They laugh. Come on, man, I didn't steal anything. You're overreacting. You doubt yourself. Maybe you imagined it. Maybe you're too sensitive. Maybe you're the problem. You try to tell people. Some say, well, why are you always getting robbed? You must be doing something wrong. Others dismiss it, as long as they didn't hurt you physically. Is it really that bad? So you stop talking, because silence feels safer than being blamed. One morning, you look into the mirror. You see someone you barely recognize, eyes dull, shoulders tense, always anticipating the next violation. And you realize the worst robbery has already occurred. Your trust, your confidence, your joy, your sense of worth. You become a statistic. One out of three men are regularly robbed. It's systemic. It's a plague. And you can't do anything about it. How do you feel? Because this constant erosion of safety is what more than 840 million women worldwide experience through physical violence, stalking, or sexual violence by a partner. Not once, but repeatedly, never safe, never believed, daily. You finally understand it wasn't coincidence, it was systemic theft, because in this metaphor, you're a man. And now you understand how it feels to be a woman today. So let me ask you a question. Why are men violent toward women? And more precisely, why was my ex-husband abusive toward me and my children? Here's the truth, the one we rarely dare to speak about. Men are violent because of system beliefs and conditions that teach, excuse, reward, and normalize male dominance. Violence grows where three things exist. First, a belief in entitlement, the idea that a man has a right to control a woman, her movements, her money, her choices, her body, her breath. Second, impunity. A world where violence is minimized, where reports are dismissed, where institutions stay neutral and protect de facto the aggressor. And third, emotional illiteracy. Boys taught to suppress sadness, fear, tenderness, and vulnerability until the only acceptable emotion left is anger. But if violence is learned, then courage can be learned, empathy can be learned, respect can be learned. Violence can be unlearned. And this is where men, the good men, the silent men, the safe men, the hesitant men, can rise. So what can we do? If we had a magic wand and we could redesign the world based on evidence, on data, on lived experience, here's what we could change. First, rewrite masculinity from the root. Teach boys that strength is tenderness, that courage is accountability, that manhood is not dominance but dignity. Two, make safety a right, not a privilege. Protection orders in hours, not weeks, shelters funded, financial aid available immediately. So living doesn't mean homelessness. Make violence very expensive. Right now, intimate partner violence is incredibly expensive, just not for the people who commit it. In the United States alone, it costs at least $8.3 billion every year in healthcare, legal costs, and lost productivity. So when I say make men's violence very expensive, I mean consequences swift and certain for hitting, for threatening, for stalking, for coercive control. no more loopholes, no more it's complicated, the truth is in between, blah, blah, blah. No more letting abusers hide between the lines of the law. For teach relationships like we teach math. Kindness in kindergarten, boundaries in primary school, consent in high school, media literacy, digital respect, repair, apology. A generation raised with emotional muscles instead of emotional silence. And five, put survivors at the center, designing policies, shaping shelters, advising police, rewriting what justice looks like. Because you cannot fix a system you have never been crushed by. So if you lived even 1 month as me, or any woman, with our dangers, our doubts, our vigilance, our statistics, what would you do to improve our society? Imagine now. Imagine a world where truth is heard the very first time, where I believe you rings out steady, clear, sublime. This exists in Iceland, where police are trained to listen with empathy. Imagine justice rising, unwavering and bold, where a woman's life is precious and her story is told. This exists in Italy, where femicide now brings life in prison. Imagine safety granted, not later but now, where protection is a promise, not a question of how. This exists in Spain, with courts built to hear women first and act without delay. Imagine children learning kindness, empathy and light, respect before romance, boundaries shining bright, and the future where love never sounds like fright. This exists in Australia and New Zealand, where young hearts learn that equality is the beginning. Imagine laws that see the bruises no camera can show, the quiet crimes of control that bruises the soul below. This exists in Scotland, where coercive control is illegal. Imagine a world where silence can no longer hide a crime, where poison in a glass is treated like a weapon every time. This exists in Germany, where death, rape, drugs are recognized as weapons. These laws are real. These solutions are real. Imagine. So now it's November 20, 2025. I'm at the Queen House, a private club in Boston. I'm sitting near the fireplace. The red sofa is comfortable, but the real luxury is that my heart rate is slow. I feel safe. I just spent a beautiful afternoon with one of my closest friends, the one who hid me in 2020, who saw the patterns, who believed me. As I sit there, surrounded by Giacometti, Chagall, Louise Bourgeois, I look at the fire and think, I am happy, my kids and I are safe. In 2020, I was standing on the edge of a cliff, jumping into the unknown with my children, not knowing if a parachute would open. I was searching for peace, safety, and harmony. And now I survived. I rose. I built something new. And now I break the silence that once broke me. That once broke me. Thank you.
Thank you for participating in today's enlightening session as we transition to our next expert. Remember that each strategy and insight is a step toward becoming a transformative leader in your field. Visit ConnectedLeadersAcademy.com to stay engaged and informed. The journey of change is ongoing. Let's move forward together.